Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, we're heading into the fall. What does that mean for your bike riding? Does a bike go away for the winter?
Well, the bike goes away for the winter, but I'm hopeful that we've still got a few good weeks left, even if it's cool, as long as it's not pouring rain, I can still get out there. So hopefully there's still a little bit left in this year.
All right, I'm hoping the same. Well, I couldn't be more excited about today's guest. I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. This person's been on my radar for a long time as well. So no further ado, today's guest is Sachi Couture, Vice President of Human Experience and Innovation at the HRPA, and recently named one of Canada's top 30 most inspiring women in SME. With more than 20 years of experience scaling technology companies, Sachi has helped leaders unlock growth by aligning culture, talent, and strategy. She's also the founder of GoCPG.ai, an AI-powered mentorship platform helping food brands scale smarter and faster. Sachi thrives at the intersection of tech, talent, and innovation, and we're excited to dive into her journey today. Sachi, I'm so excited about this one. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much. Wow, I felt like a celebrity with that introduction.
Well, listen, we could probably do a four-hour podcast, but by design, we keep them snackable, right? So people can listen to them while they're on the treadmill or dropping the kids off to school, what have you. But I thought a great place to start, because we've chatted about this offline, so I thought our audience would also be interested. You're leading the human experience and innovation at HRPA. What does that human experience mean to you? And then perhaps you can even talk about how it's shaping the future of work for HR leaders across Canada.
Yeah, for sure. There's a bit of a backstory on human experience and that title. So Jody, our CEO, was at a conference in the US and she heard the title from a C-suite working at a company called WorkHuman, and her title was Chief Human Experience Officer. And sort of she kind of brought that back and said, that feels more human. That feels more appropriate. And I think the language is now starting to matter more. We're shifting from policies, we're shifting from operations, we're shifting from perks. And really where we're going is how people feel in the workplace, how they experience work, how they grow, very much rooted in that one-to-one personalization. So I often draw parallels between customer experience and the digital transformation age, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Now we're seeing it on the HR side in terms of human experience, really focusing on that one-to-one experience versus cookie cutter policies and operations.
It's been a very long time since I've been an employee. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. So I've always been one of the leadership or one of the bosses. I cringe at that word nowadays, but I love the experience of our company. I love coming in. I love what I do. But I think I'm a little jaded because I have ownership in the company. So hopefully I'm enjoying what I'm doing. How do I make sure that experience, that wonderful experience, and people are really enjoying what they're doing? How do I make sure the rest of the team and all of my employees are experiencing that as well? Because I would love if they felt the way I did coming into work every day.
Yeah. Such an interesting point, Robin. I think the data will tell you, yes, ownership, yes, having skin in the game from a mindset is so important, but it's not just about options and monetary. It's about purpose. It's about connecting to the purpose. And it's about having clarity in how I, as an employee, Robin, if I'm working for you, how I'm actually going to support our team's success. I can see that line of sight and, of course, the broader success. So when your CEO at an all hands talks about, you know, the wins, the successes, you're driven and motivated because you know exactly the role that you're playing in that journey.
Satchi, to build on Robin's point just a little bit then, and I think that's some great feedback. What would be some quick wins that you could say, you know, here's even one or two things that the leadership could bring to the table as examples of what you just said?
Yeah, for sure. There's a couple of things. There's many things because I find myself constantly reminding and nudging the LT. But I'd say number one, you have to prioritize one-on-ones and ask the question of, there's two questions. How are you doing? And how can I support your success here? And leaders get busy. Yeah, I'm going to cancel. Like, this is the number one complaint I hear is, Satchi, my leader's too busy. Because I'll say, oh, did you go to your leader? Did you go to your manager? So I think prioritizing time to authentically listen and understand the unique needs of your team. And then I'd say the second piece is owning culture as a leader, not just relying on your people and culture leader, your human experience team, really owning it. And playing an active role in building that and nurturing the values of the company. So, you know, employees are very perceptive. The number one reason cultures fall apart is they see their leaders not walking the talk. And so I think you just have to really play an active role in showing up authentically to support the success of your team members.
Let's change gears a little bit and let's talk about your background in scaling tech companies. That's the world that you came from.
Yeah.
So I want to understand maybe from that experience of scaling tech companies through some major growth points, you know, what lessons can you bring from that world into the work you're doing at the HRPA today?
Yeah. I often say, you know, for those of us that have been groomed in tech, you know, the tsunami of change management that's now mainstream, I think we have a lot that we can teach. And so I'd say a couple of things. One is you have to be comfortable with change, agility, and adapting. So the more seamlessly, whether it's a leader, whether it's your team, the more seamlessly you can pivot and don't be married to an idea, get comfortable being uncomfortable with change, I think because that's our new norm, the sooner we can jump on that bandwagon, the better. So I think encouraging employees at HRPA, just to give you an example, we're a legacy organization. We have employees that have been there 20 years, 25 years. And change is really hard when you've been in an organization and doing some things the same way. So I think as leaders, we really have to support that journey. And I'd say number two, which I talk about all the time, is you have to innovate. And when you innovate, you have to be okay not getting it right and making mistakes. And I think the traditional mindset quite often is if you look at waterfall, you know, software development, it's like, we want to achieve this. And at the end, you better have this ready. And I think along the way, so many things can go wrong. And so I think it's really important to allow your teams to fail, learn from it, and try again.
So one of our guiding principles is actually around learning and change. And you said it, it has to be these days. Things are, if you thought change was a big thing in the past, you know, you ain't seen nothing yet. But I'll go back to the question I asked you the first time. And you said it yourself, change is tough, especially for someone who's been there for 20 years and they're used to things. But we know this wall is coming towards us. Again, I'll say a couple of quick wins or quick tips on how to get people maybe out of that discomfort zone with change and adapting and everything around it.
Yeah, I think the number one thing is leaders in the organization have to role model that they're adapting, they're trying to get comfortable, being uncomfortable, doing things out of their comfort zone, making mistakes. I think that's the single quickest way to get your teams to actually embrace the behavior you need to actually showcase it yourself.
I love that you brought up the point about not being afraid to fail, because I think that's more and more, you know, there's always this stigma around you had to get it right, and especially the leadership, right? You're expected to be right. You're expected to know what to do, but it just isn't the way anymore. Like, there's too much stuff happening. You've got to do a little bit of trial and error and not feel bad or not worry that you're going to look bad if it's kind of...
Wait a minute, Al, are you telling me you don't know all the answers? Because I had assumed you did, so.
Well, I've done a good job of hiding that then. Good for me.
Yeah, you've got a crystal ball somewhere, right, Al?
He closes the blinds, you know, looks at the crystal ball.
Exactly.
Well, Sachi, I really believe people have heard me talk about this, these moments in time. And sometimes those moments of time are traveling with my wife and we have this experience. Sometimes it's conversations. And as you were answering one of Al's questions earlier today, I captured one of those moments in time. And in the moment, I realized that's something I'm going to use not only for the rest of my career, but the rest of my life. And it fits in so well with the theme of this podcast, Success Leaves Clues, because you just gave me a really good clue. And I'd love to expand on, you said one of the questions that you can ask to your team is, how can I support your success? And I see that being able to use that in my career, but I also see that being able to use that outside of in personal relationships as well. But just talking about business today on my team, because exactly to your point, I am flying a million miles an hour. Sometimes I'm in the office and I don't see some of my key people because they're upstairs, I'm downstairs, and a whole day will go by.
Yeah.
And I think, oh my gosh, I went the whole day and I didn't touch base with my team. And I'd love to have those conversations about how can I support your success? What's the best approach there? Like, how do you make sure that a quarter doesn't go by and you haven't had those types of conversations? Because I would hate for someone to be, well, he doesn't even talk to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to grow the company and do good things for everybody, but they might see it as, geez, I don't even see this guy.
Yeah, no, it's hard. I would say for me, what I do is it's in my calendar. It's a reoccurring meeting. And just like my schedule when I go to the gym, I try to stick to it. I think this is one of those things that you got to have a hard and fast rule that you cannot change that. That is priority one. Priority two, priority three, maybe other things. That's one thing that you cannot skip. So that's one. And just be realistic. It doesn't have to be weekly. I always say this to the leaders, like, and certain employees maybe need more frequent touch points. Other employees may just be happy with monthly. But here's the one trick that I tell all the leaders is that get out of the office. In one of my companies, we actually used to load Starbucks and Tim Hortons cards because we had both. Give it to our leaders and we'd say, here you go, do your one-on-ones over coffee outside the office. You'll be amazed at the difference in terms of the conversation, the insights, who's willing to share what once you get out of that sort of autopilot work environment.
So for our one business partner, for Al and I, that would work perfectly. The Starbucks gift card, and we could have coffee. For our one business partner, Joe, it would have to be, we'd have to see if we can get a gift card for a Portuguese bakery because he just won't do any other coffee.
Oh my gosh.
We'll have to look into that one.
Oh my gosh. Well, as long as there's one within a kilometer radius, I think exactly. You should make it happen.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's always a Portuguese or Italian bakery within one kilometer radius. I think that's just the way it is.
Exactly. Well, I'd love to talk about just, again, your background. Because I think you've helped organizations navigate growth and those inflection points. What do you think leaders most often get wrong about scaling culture at the same pace as the business? Because usually scaling the business is, that's the forefront. But if you leave culture behind, things fall apart, right?
Yeah, they do. And I know, listen, I repeat this often, which is 30 years ago when I came into the HR profession, CEOs and at their all hands were talking about one thing or two things, bottom line revenue. CEOs never talked about culture. Fast forward, we know the impact culture can have. And so I think if I'm a leader today, what are they getting wrong, you know, in terms of bringing that risk into the business? I'd say it's rooted in a couple of things. One is they're over-indexing business conversations on financial metrics. So you have to measure your people, your culture, the impact of your leadership, the company wins, successes, outside of that traditional financial framework. So I think it's just a conversation that has to be at the strategic level. It's not Sachi standing up at the all hands and talking about people culture. It should actually be our CEO as well. And I think sometimes leaders forget to be human. They get stuck in the title and the expectation and the role and the reporting structure. And I think, you know, the one thing I'm always trying to do is bring the human back into the workplace, right? So to me, that's taking the time to know who's on your team, What are they like? What are their likes and dislikes? So just taking an interest, an authentic interest in who they are versus I'm your manager. These are your KPIs. We're going to meet. We're going to go through it. So it has to be more than that.
And I also think there's a little bit of imposter syndrome that creates a barrier there, because a lot of the leadership that I've spoken to on the CEO side, and exactly, you know, I made a joke about it, about Al not knowing everything. But you do feel when you're in that leadership role that there is an expectation to know everything. And sometimes that makes you a little unapproachable in my mind, right? Because people have this expectation of you. And if you don't know the answer,
yeah,
I mean, are you being a good leader?
Yeah.
Right? So I find that the leadership people that I've talked to that are willing to, and Al's very good about this, is like, hey, I don't know if this is going to work, but we're going to try. And if it doesn't, then we're going to pivot and try something else. And I see the reaction of the team. Like, I think he's very approachable and like, oh, this person's real. Like, he's trying to make the best decisions for the company. And I think that's why maybe the employees would say something different. I hope not. But I think we've built a really, really good, strong culture and strong team out of that, because leadership people like Al are very approachable and will admit, hey, I don't have all the answers here, right?
Exactly. You're being human.
Yeah.
You're being human. You're not being a CEO stuck in that box. You're actually showing us that you're also a human in addition to being a CEO.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Robin, because, you know, the other option was, wow, this guy doesn't know anything about what he's doing. I do want to go back a little bit, though, and talk about, again, the culture. And I mean, I'm just going to throw something out there. Like you talked about in the past, you know, the metrics are all around revenue and profit and bringing value to the shareholder and all that kind of stuff. Are we there yet? Or do you think we'll get there where part of the success metrics will be not just all about numbers, but also about people and culture and that type of thing? And if so, if we can get there, what would that look like?
Yeah, it's a great question, Al. I think if we weren't already there and if companies weren't already there, I think the tsunami around AI and upskilling is going to force us to get there. They're going to force us to get there because the skills that we have in our organizations, my prediction is that even the job titles that we have in the organization a year from now, 2 years from now, a lot of those job titles will become obsolete, right? So I think if we do not start paying attention to the talent metrics, the growth of the talent, the adaptability of the talent, and how that connects back to the evolving needs of the business, because, you know, the businesses are going to need different skills. If you don't measure it, you're not going to be able to achieve it. So I think that creates some risk. So if there was a time where it's going to matter and companies will start to see that, I think it's coming very soon. I hope.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about your role as a VP of Human X and Innovation.
Yeah.
Where you're constantly navigating the future of work.
Yeah.
So can you talk about some trends that you see in human-centered innovation that you just think, you know, leaders can't afford to ignore this? They've got to be on top of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's so many. So one of the things that we at HRPA are really trying to model and sort of showcase the gold standard for, because we know it's coming, is really around total rewards. So you've got four generations with very different needs, with very different wants and expectations, and the cookie cutter, you guys will know this, and this is your subject matter expertise, that the cookie cutter formulaic benefits no longer work. Right? We're spending, I just did analysis of 3 years of benefits data, and we've got little pockets where actually we're paying, you know, really hefty premiums, but no one's actually using it. So I think taking the time to understand the demographics of your workplace and making sure that your total reward strategy is kind of aligned to that. So that's one. And then the second one, I'd say it's a hot topic right now. I'm sure it's come up on your podcast, is return to office. Right? Mm-hmm. The RTO policies. And I think, especially kind of with the Gen Zs and the younger workers, they don't see the butts in seats as proof of value, right? You have to give me a better reason. They're challenging, they're questioning. And I think companies that do not take that conversation seriously are not intentional about understanding, again, goes back to the needs of your workforce. What works at TD or Royal Bank in terms of the 4 or 5 day mandate may not work for your organization and understand why, right? There are hundreds of thousands of employees, right? 50% of their employees were already 100% in office because of the retail banking and some of these. So it's a different situation. So context matters. Your demographic matters. So it goes back to what I said earlier in the podcast, which is that personalization mindset around people, culture, talent.
Interesting, and probably no accident that you brought up the return to office policy, because I don't think that's, we just had, Robin and I had that conversation literally, what, 2 days ago? And we had the conversation because we were talking to someone else who was talking about it. And, you know, it's not going away.
Yeah, it's not going away. There's pushback. And I think that pushback is going to have a ripple effect on talent too, because you're going to have certain demographic of talent that are going to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm an A player. I know what I bring and it's not going to work for me.
Yeah,
for sure.
We were talking about benefits, which of course was just music to my ears.
I know. Did you like that plug-in?
Oh, I just love that so much. But it got me thinking when you were talking about that, like when I look at our own company and I look at where we're investing in employees and benefits, you know, benefits, it's not the top line, you know, it's not the number one item that we spend money on, but it's certainly probably number two, I mean, outside of salary. So there's a lot of investment that we make in people and in culture, of course. When you're working with, and maybe it's a new CEO, because, you know, you've had a lot of experience over the years.
Yeah.
What's one thing that you would wish CEOs and maybe even boards understood better about that ROI investing in people? Because I have met leadership where it's like, just get someone, just fill the role, fill the seat without putting really much thought into it. And for me, it's hard to measure that ROI, but I've kind of seen the light and know, okay, really good people that fit our culture and align with our guiding principles, that really works. And I've seen that happen. So what would your advice be to people who kind of are having a hard time understanding the ROI investing in their people?
Yeah, we get so many of our HRPA members coming to us and saying, hey, I want to do all these great things and they're important, but my CEO or my CFO is not approving it or not approving the expense. And I think first and foremost, you need to understand the numbers of your business. You have to make it your business. In fact, little plug-in for HRPA, because we realized this skill gap, we just developed a program, which is business acumen for HR leaders, right? So understanding financial metrics, top line KPIs. And I think if you can improve your literacy on that as a prerequisite, I think your ability to come in and influence investments in more tangible things that you can't measure around people and culture becomes so much easier. So if it was me and I had to go to a CEO, I would really focus on, there's a lot of reputable business publications that talk about the cost of bad hires, right? It's usually 4 to 5x. I think if you can, as a company, stay focused on getting the hiring right and getting the retention right, that cost that is constantly a risk, I think you can really mitigate that.
Well, Sachi, this has been an amazing conversation and I want to keep it going. And you might or might not been aware of Al's signature question that always comes at the end of the podcast. And I just, with everything you're doing, I'm so curious about how you're going to answer this, because I know you'd probably have answers on the business side. You probably have answers on the entrepreneurial side, because I know you're doing some things there, as well as the personal side. So entirely up to you. But if you're up for it, Al will take it away.
Okay, I'm ready, Al. Bring it on. Let's see if I can give you an interesting answer.
Okay. All right. Here we go. I'm sure you can. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So perhaps from your professional point of view, your personal point of view, what proverbial trees are you planting?
Yeah. Gee, that's, I think I'm going to take a personal angle on this because we've talked a lot of business and we've talked a lot of shop talk. So for me, hopefully my parents don't kill me even if I talk about this, but it's a female South Asian woman. There was a misguided mindset around what professional success looks like, right? Rooted in, you got to be an engineer, you got to be a doctor, you got to be a lawyer. And I chose a very different path. I picked a very different lane. And you know, very early in my career, the culture that I was groomed in, nobody really respected it, right? And so I'm now looking back on my career and I hope I can pay it forward to show future young, aspiring South Asian women who are going to veer outside of traditions and norms. Hopefully I can carve out a path to show them that not only is success, and to me, success is defined by so many different things, not just monetary, but fulfillment and purposeful and making your mark and also impacting businesses. I mean, these are all very real accomplishments that, you know, as a professional. So yeah, I'm hoping I can pay it forward for all the young future South Asian women whose parents are like, you got to be a doctor, you got to be an engineer.
Not there's anything wrong with that. Okay, that was great. And for someone who kind of got that question thrown at the last second, and I'm really glad you brought up some of those things, because like the question implies, you may never see it, but you know that you're setting the stage and you're, as you say, paying it forward and you're removing some of those obstacles for other people. So I think that's great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's a really great question, Al. I'm glad. I mean, you know, I would have been overthinking it. So maybe in a good way, it's good that you just threw it at me 20 minutes ago. So thank you.
And I love, as we're getting toward the end of the episode, I love the theme of paying it forward. I think that's a great message for everybody to hear, kind of to wrap this one up.
Yeah.
Saji, you've been on my radar for a while. I'm so glad we're connected.
I'm so honored. Thank you, guys.
I know we're going to have future conversations. For listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing at HRPA or on a personal basis, what's the best way for people to reach out?
I am very active on LinkedIn, and I do make it a point that if you send me a note, I will always respond. So as long as you're not selling me something, I'll always respond. So yeah, reach out to me.
All right. Well, that does it for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here today. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.